thank you for donating more than $100,000 to Issues Etc. in the past month. And with 2 weeks left in 2016, we're $18,000 short of expenses. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of the year.
Catherine Fombard, do you take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband?
Yes, I do.
Join your right hand. With this, your vow of love and faith, I confirm your covenant as an indissoluble Christian marriage. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Amen.
That's a clip from the 1953 movie Martin Luther, The Wedding of Martin Luther and His Wife, Katrina von Bora. After Luther's death, her life becomes very, very difficult financially, health-wise. She spends a lot of time outside Wittenberg running from war, from pestilence and plague. And in one of those refugee moments, she never makes it back. We're going to talk about Katrina von Bora, who died on this day 464 years ago. Joining us to talk about it, Rebecca DeGarmo. She's director of programming for the Evangelical Lutheran Synod's Ottesen Museum and historical content creator for the Katie Luther Facebook page. Rebecca, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd.
Why December 20th to remember this woman?
Well, Katie von Bora Luther died on December 20th, 1552. And so, like all the other saints of the church, we celebrate her death date.
Let's talk a little bit about her life. Much has been written about her life with Luther, but right. It's almost like a page turns with Luther's death. Her life before Luther, I'm given to believe, was not idyllic, but she certainly had some prosperity in her business dealings. She had, of course, Luther with her. After Luther's death, how did things change for Katie Luther? How did she take his death in the first place?
Well, you know, she took her death as well as she could, considering she wasn't able to be with him when she died. Of course, he died in away from home, and so she didn't even find out right away. The messengers had to come and tell her. And then, because of circumstances that of the way life was at the time and other things going on, it was not easy for her. Of course, the first thing that happened is she lost his income to a point. The elector did continue to give her some of the stipend that he had been giving Luther. She was allowed to continue to live in the Black Cloister. But in Luther's will, he had specified that she should be the guardian of the children, which was very unusual at the time. Normally, the widow, as well as the children, were given separate guardians. And unfortunately, Luther's friends didn't even necessarily back her up on this. So there was a bit of a squabble amongst the friends even. I think they were a little bit afraid that she spoiled the kids a little bit too much and were a little bit worried about what kind of education they would get. And so eventually she was given two guardians and the children were given three. And some of those guardians for each her and the children were relatives, which I think kind of helped her situation. But that was kind of the first big hurdle. And then, you know, just the finances were tough. So one of the things she had to do is, when Luther was alive, she was already taking in boarders in the Black Cloister, usually university students. And very quickly, she started doing that again, and that enabled her to have at least a little bit of income so that she wasn't, you know, totally without income after his death.
We need to remember this is the days before life insurance and pensions and all of those kinds of things. A widow with children would face, any widow with children would face this. I guess we're just kind of surprised to find out that Luther's widow with children
did. And actually, for that time, it was unusual for a widow to keep custody of the children. So he was actually asking for something very unusual. There was even a dispute over whether his will was validly signed so that it was legal. So that came into all of it, too.
What were the approximate ages of the Luther children when Luther himself died?
Hans, the oldest, was 19. Martin was 16. Paul was 13. And Margareta, the youngest, was 11. So they were all still minors. They were still under the care of Katie.
When she comes under this guardianship, and that both she and the children, and she kind of goes back into business, you say that things improved. What happened next? How would you tell the story of Katrina from there on?
Well, shortly after that, the small Caldic War broke out. And, of course, Wittenberg was under attack. And so by the end of that year, Martin died in 1546, and by the end of that year, she was already fleeing Wittenberg because Wittenberg was under attack. She wasn't safe there. So that wasn't very helpful, and we don't even know where she ended up. The historians haven't been able to find that as far as I've been able to see anywhere. On the upside, well, to a point, King Christian III of Denmark was able to help her out with a little bit of money a couple of times. So at least she had that little bit of extra income. And then she comes back to Wittenberg at the end of, or in the spring of 1547, and within a couple of months she has to leave again because of the war. She really wanted to go to Denmark at that point because of Christian's support, but she only made it as far as Braunschweig, and she ended up staying there for a few months before it was safe to go back to Wittenberg.
So she is a, I guess you'd call her a war refugee at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, she really was.
With the children along with her, or were they with the guardians?
You know, I haven't really found anything on that. We know that Hans and Martin and Paul were all in school, at least at some point with private tutors, but I don't know how, we don't know how much. I'm presuming at least Margareta went with her, and maybe Paul or Martin as well, but I don't know that that's totally clear. It kind of depended on, you know, who else was able to help out with them too, I suppose.
And so, having to flee Wittenberg, that was not only her home, that the Black Cloister, it was property, that was security for her, and she had no guarantee that if she returned, that she could retake that property.
Right. And so when she did return, the war, she had to kind of rebuild some of that too, because she used a lot of that as farmland. A lot of her crops had been destroyed. They had numerous fruit trees on the property, the Black Cloister. A lot of those had been chopped down. Earlier in her life, she had been able to buy her family's farm in Solsdorf, and the war destroyed a lot of that property, and even some of her cattle were killed during the war. So a lot of her farm income was destroyed at that time, too.
Do we know why it is that Luther's friends and colleagues didn't, or at least apparently didn't, step up more than we would expect them to?
I think, like I said before, it's because they were afraid that she was spoiling the children, that she wasn't going to bring them up sternly enough. And a little bit of me thinks that part of that might be because Hans wasn't the best student, and some people thought that that was because he was being coddled by his mother. I think later on we find out it's just that Hans wasn't a great student. He never really totally excelled in life without a little bit of the help of his father's friends. And so I think there was a little bit of a bias against the way Katie was raising the children.
Then there is a plague. What happened there?
Well, the plague had gone through Wittenberg several times. In fact, earlier in Martin and Katie's marriage, the plague went through when she was pregnant. And after the plague was out of Wittenberg, she gave birth to their daughter Elizabeth, and Elizabeth died. She didn't die of the plague, but there are theories that Elizabeth died of the after effects of Katie being around people with the plague because she had been nursing them. This time, the plague seemed to be a little bit more severe. Katie ended up fleeing again, and this time, it just was a very difficult thing for her to stay in town. So she and Paul and Margareta got into a wagon and headed out of town. Hans was in school, and Martin as well. So they were taken care of, but she took Paul and Margareta, and she was headed toward Torgau at that time.
And there was an accident.
Yes. We don't know where exactly it happened, but somewhere along the way, something startled the horses that were pulling the wagon, and she jumped out to try to steady them to save her children. She ended up falling into a ditch that was full of cold, wet water. This was fall, but it must have been a very cool fall because the reports talk about her the water being very, very cold, and it caused paralysis. So Paul and Margarita, who were about 19 and 18 at this time, were able to get her to Torgau, but she was ended up paralyzed from a combination of shock and the cold water, and was bedbound for several months.
Did that eventually lead to her death?
Yes, it did. She was, you know, she recovered from some of the paralysis, but she never really got all of her health back. And so eventually on December 20th of 1552, she died.
How was that received? What do we know about, we know what kind of send-off Luther got, sometimes a little over the top. What about Katrina Luther?
This was a lot more subdued, partly because they couldn't take her back to Wittenberg. It just wasn't safe. So she ended up being buried in Torgau, in the church there, and her grave marker is still there today.
What do we know about the children post-Luther, then, of course, now their mother's death?
Well, Hans was 26 at the time. He had been studying law, like his father before him. He worked in the court at Weimar, and that was probably because of the influence of the elector John Frederick, who was Katie's elector at the time of her death. And he kind of looked out for Hans, made sure he got a job. He married Elizabeth Krusiger, who was the daughter of John Krusiger and Martin and Katie's very dear friend. And other than that, all we know is that they had one daughter who got married and never had any children. And he died while on business in Königsberg in 1575. He was only 49 when he died. Martin went on to study theology, but he never entered the ministry. And he also got married to a young lady named Anna Heilinger. She was the daughter of one of Wittenberg's many mayors. They never had any children, and he died in 1565. He was only 33. He died very young.
And that was considered young even for that time?
Yeah. When you consider that, you know, Martin was considered old when he died, but he was 62. Katie was only 53, so 33 was really quite young. Paul actually lived to be the oldest of the children. He actually got engaged while Katie was in Torgau in her sickbed to a young lady named Anna von Warbeck. Her father was a translator who was well known to the Reformers, a good friend of the Reformers, and he became a doctor. He later commented that his mother was almost as good of a doctor as he was because of all the things that she had learned in the convent about medicine. He taught at the University of Jena for a while, and then he was court physician to several of the dukes and princes. And he and Anna had six children, and they still have descendants around the world to this day. He died in 1593 at the age of 60 in Leipzig.
And then the youngest, the daughter?
Margarita. She was still a minor when her mother died. She was put under the guardianship of Philip Melanchthon, and he actually ended up being a very good guardian for her. She fell in love with a young man named George von Kuhnheim, who was an orphaned Prussian nobleman, and his guardians were not thrilled with the fact that he had gotten engaged so young, and so Melanchthon actually personally interceded on the couple's behalf, and they were able to get married. Every report says that they had a very, very happy marriage, even though it ended up being quite short. They had nine children, but unfortunately, only three of them outlived her. She died also very young at the age of 36 in 1570.
Sounds like we're looking back into a time that generally for everybody was life was kind of often bitter and short.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, in that short amount of time, how would you summarize what Katrina Luther, who she only a year older than me when she died, what kind of contribution she made to the Reformation?
Well, she's kind of considered the first lady of the Lutheran parsonage. I don't know that you can really say she set the standard because her life was so unusual because of the man she was married to. It was not a typical parsonage, and yet she exemplified the gracious hostess that we kind of hope pastors' wives are. She was a very hard worker, and she was kind of groundbreaking in that way. And yet at the same time, I always think of her as just kind of living the life that God put in front of her and serving her vocation the best way she knew how. I don't think she would have seen herself as necessarily trying to be a groundbreaking person. So it's kind of a mix of, you know, just, yes, she was, but not because she set out to do it that way.
Rebecca DeGarmo is director of programming of the Evangelical Lutheran Synod's Odison Museum. She's historical content creator for the Katie Luther Facebook page. Her husband, Mark, has translated the book, The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. You can browse before you buy under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Rebecca, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series, Are Social Progressives Anti-Science? We'll be talking with Dr. Kevin Voss about gene editing. We'll discuss Martin Luther on the Lord's Prayer. Dr. Ken Cherb will be our guest. We'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Jesus and the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4. Thursday, we're going to talk with Terry Mattingly about the top religion stories of 2016. Then on Friday, it's a Christmas tradition with us. We're going to be asking you and getting your answers to the question, what's your favorite Christmas hymn and why? We'll leave a place at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, for you to answer that question. What's your favorite Christmas hymn and why? That's Friday on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.